Toronto Mayor John Tory joins us live now. Hello, sir.
Hi, guys.
How are you today?
Good, thanks. And yourself?
We're doing very well. Lots to talk about today. Let's talk about a story that's just developed earlier this afternoon, that being the Muskoka region, as well as other regions in Ontario, applying the emergency brake that we've been hearing about. And this plays right into a conversation you've had with us a number of times about the dangers of maybe opening up too early with unforeseen things coming your way.
Yeah, and it's why we're watching the numbers very carefully, especially the variants, because the other numbers have kind of stabilized. They haven't gone down as much in the last 4 or 5 days. I'll call it the sort of old COVID-19. The variant numbers have been continuing to rise, but not at the moment in a kind of an exponential growth. So we're just having to keep a very close eye on it, and the clock is ticking on the March the 9th date. And so, we're having discussions every single day, and that's including discussions with business, too. Dr. DeVille and I met with the Canadian Federation of Independent Business the other day and heard their situation and talked to them about a lot of different things that are affected by the framework and so on. And we'll continue to talk about the health numbers and talk about the business numbers. And these are not easy decisions to make, and ultimately, of course, it has to involve the Premier as well.
Speaking of that, starting Monday, Hamilton will begin vaccinating residents 85 years of age or older. York Region will allow residents 80 years of age or older to start at least booking their appointments to receive their COVID-19 shot. Is Toronto considering doing the same, perhaps not waiting for the province to make these decisions?
Well, first and foremost, of course, we need to have supply of vaccines, so we couldn't start to vaccinate too many 80-year-old plus people or anybody else at the moment until more supply arrives. But secondly, this is a point that I have to make in a lot of these kinds of discussions. There is only one city like Toronto in all of Canada. There's nothing like it anywhere else in the country, because you've got a population, first of all, we're trying to vaccinate, of 3 million people, but to complicate it, within that, you've got tens of thousands of healthcare workers who have been placed as the highest priority by the provincial framework ahead of 80-year-old plus people. And no other place has that. Like, a lot of these kinds of places you're talking about have one hospital, maybe two. I mean, we have all kinds of hospitals. We have thousands of doctors here. Well, I think one-third of all the doctors, I believe, in all of Ontario live here. And so we have to get through those people, which have been placed by the provincial prioritization framework as the highest priority people to get vaccinated. And we're doing a great job of it, by the way. But it's a complicated situation here that means it might take a bit longer to get to the 80-plus. And our timetable is more likely to be within the provincial framework that they set out, starting to do that into this coming month, but not tomorrow morning.
Are you hopeful with the AstraZeneca announcement and with the possibility of even more vaccines becoming available, hopefully exponentially, that we're going to speed things up even quicker than we'd hoped?
That's the real, bonus in all this, Jay, is that if that approval means that we start getting that vaccine shipped, almost immediately, then, that will change things, because a lot of the superstructures, of these nine clinics, the nine mass immunization clinics we have set up, it's three or four of them, I think, could open tomorrow morning, and the other three or four could open in a very, very short period of time. But they're not opening because at the moment there isn't the supply, and of course the registration and scheduling system is something that's going to be up and running on the 15th of March. And so, and again, given the scale of what we're dealing with in Toronto, which nobody else faces, and none of those other places you mentioned even come close to what we have to do here, and we're going to be ready to take that challenge on, but it requires a robust registration system. It requires, obviously a big supply. If you're going to start in with any kind of group in Toronto, it's going to be bigger than a group anywhere else.
Toronto, when it comes to naming workplaces, Toronto names workplaces where a COVID-19 outbreak occurs. There are other regions such as Peel that doesn't. There was a big column today in the Toronto Star asking, who's doing it right? What's behind the decision here in Toronto to do that?
Transparency. And transparency for the public, but even more importantly, in a way, for the employees, so that there is, no chance. And nobody's trying to shame anybody or embarrass anybody. We're simply trying to make it known to the public and known to the employees where there have been problems. And that, we think, expedites the process of resolving those problems and, in fact, preventing them from happening in other places, just because people know that this is going to be a matter of public record. And so, I think it was the right thing to do. We've tried to offer dropped in favor of transparency on everything from the beginning, including the information on race and other kinds of things that we published with regard to test results and all those sorts of things that we felt were right for the public to know and right for the journalists to know and right for the employees in this case to know.
Something that got the most attention on our show today, certainly reaction when it came to calls and texts at 7-10-10 today, were the numbers when it came to how many nursing home workers have opted for vaccine. That number, a lot lower than a lot of people had thought, with only 55% of them saying that they would take a vaccine. Are you concerned with that number?
Yes. And I can tell you that we had to go through, and it turned out to be easier with residents than with staff people. With residents, we had to go through getting consent, for them, because a lot of them, their family, of course, are not right there. The employees get to sign for themselves, and a lot of the employees have just as yet chosen not to take advantage of the opportunity, and the vaccinations have resumed now, so that you're hoping that number is going to continue to go up. But the more people that get vaccinated, whether it's long-term care workers, healthcare workers, or just people, the better. And, we've been constrained, not so much in the long-term care sector, we've been constrained overall in terms of this discussion today by lack of supply, but that seems to be, some bright spots seem to be on the horizon with the AstraZeneca and with the deliveries that the Government of Canada is now taking.
We've had a number of people write in while we've been having this conversation about seniors and them not having access to the internet necessarily to book an appointment, to get a vaccine appointment. I'm sure you already have that. You've already had that conversation that everybody's kind of in the know. That there's got to be a way to get them the appointments that they need. Are you guys working on that?
Oh, yeah. On the same day as the registration system is going to be opened by the province on March 15th, a call center will also open so that people can make the reservation by phone or by online. And one of the things that was mentioned, because we were talking about this today on a call we had with the Premier about this, is, hopefully there will also be a degree of cooperation between kids and their parents, their elderly parents, between seniors clubs and so on, because the online option is just easier, for everybody. But having said all that, there will be a phone option, and those things will all be well publicized. But we're even hopeful, though, that the seniors will help each other and that the ones that are more digitally comfortable will help with that, and the kids will even help their parents to do it digitally. But yes, there'll be a phone option.
So restaurants and bars can now start applying for the Cafe TO program in anticipation of restrictions lifting and them being open to having more business, obviously. Is this something that will go through fairly quickly, that bars and restaurants will find out that they're going to be able to participate in the program?
Yes, and the whole idea this year, we're starting the application process 2 months earlier, and the whole idea for the first wave, and I should make careful note of this, because the first window for applications will be for the next 30 days, and all the ones received during that time, assuming they're approved, which we hope most of them will be, would be then installed by the Victoria Day weekend, the May 2-4 weekend. Then there'll be a second window in the next 30 days, but those ones won't be guaranteed their installation until June, because there's only so many we can do at a time, and to make sure we do them safely, because we're, closing off lanes of traffic and doing all those things. So people, if they want to be open by May 2-4, would be well advised to get in to the first window. And we're hoping we've tried to set up a more streamlined application process. And we're really anxious to have as many of these as we can, including more of them in Scarborough, North York, and Etobicoke, where they're more likely to be in parking lots and so on, and less likely to be in curb lanes of traffic. But we want to make sure that there's full participation right across the city.
I'm the last guy, as you know,
the money in the bars.
They do. Yeah, no doubt. I'm the last guy that enjoys a photo op. In fact, I would say I detest them when politicians do photo ops. But the more I hear from people at 7-10-10 and on the phone lines, where there's, I'm not going to say these are people that are anti-vaxxers, John. I would say that these people have a deal of anxiety when it comes to putting something in their body. Is there any thought, maybe on your part or on the, you can't don't speak for the Premier, but maybe on your part to get vaccinated in a rather public way so that people know that it's okay? I know that happened over in the UK a few months back. Is that something you've thought of?
Yes, I had my first flu shot ever this year because they were concerned that more people than ever should get a flu shot in light of COVID and everything, and I had one, never had one before, and I did it only because they asked me to and because I've never just had one. And I've said I would go, but of course I'm mindful of them telling me, meaning the people that work in my office and the public health people, that I should go, because the converse is also true. If I showed up to have one of those photo opportunities to show how safe I believe it is and how necessary I think it is for everybody to get vaccinated, there will be a group of people who say, oh, they're goes the mayor jumping the lineup. You know,
it's a balance. It's a tough balance. I'm not going to lie to you. That's a very tough balance you've got in front of
you. And as of this moment, my plan is to get my vaccination when my month comes up for my age, but not before. But if it's going to help, because, look, it is crucially, crucially important, and it is safe for people to get vaccinated. You know, we're having all these vaccination hesitancy workshops. I'm attending one, I think, tomorrow or Sunday, just to hear what they have to say, you know, to teach people or to inform people so that they will get vaccinated. And I will do it if it's going to set a positive example for people, but I'm not going to jump the lineup unless they literally ask me to do it, and I maybe ask them to ask me in writing so I can show you the letter.
We're going to end with a fun one because everybody's asking, and we just finished talking about it. Are you a camper or a non-camper?
Camper as in a camping out in a tent,
yeah,
you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, I loved camping in days gone by, but if you said, have I done it for years, like a lot of people, I just sort of fell out of the habit. I camped all the time when I was a Boy Scout and after that, and winter camping, too. I loved winter camping. I mean, it's a little bad to wake up in a sleeping bag when it's like minus 10 and haul yourself out to light the fire and, you know, put on the coffee, but I loved camping, but I just haven't done it for quite some time.
There you go.
Not shocking you were a Boy Scout, though. Not shocking
at all. Have a great weekend, sir.
You too, guys. Bye-bye.
Thank you.